You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
And I'm happy and we are privileged to bring on retired Brigadier General, Air Force Brigadier General Blaine Holt, who has been a busy man today. General, thanks for joining the Rob O'Donnell Show.
Oh, man, it's great to return to your show. How are you, Rob?
Good, good. So, I mean, you got to be a happy Air Force veteran, a former Air Force Brigadier General, looking at what just happened over this weekend.
I'm just so proud of the airmen in this case on pure mission execution. You know, we've been so concerned about DEI, woke, bad recruiting numbers, but apparently there's a sharp edge still on that blade. With over 500 airmen participating, a complete deception plan, everything having to go perfect, calm out, communications out procedures for these bombers that everybody thought were on their way to Guam. Nope, they're on their way to Iran directly and then going to turn around and come all the way back safely. Pickled the bombs off, got them exactly where they needed to be on target. And here's the thing. Even though we're focused on Iran, it's the second and third order effect of an operation like that that helps you. So they woke up in Moscow and Beijing and Pyongyang, and they said, oh, my gosh, I didn't even know they could do that. And it's like, oh, yes, we can. And so it's very good for the nation. You've got some deterrence that we just built into this.
No doubt. And the coordination for an attack like this, and it's interesting you bring that up, because I was out up with a couple of friends on that morning, and I saw that the B-2s were on their way to Guam. And I mentioned, I said, hey, the B-2s are in motion. There's a tanker with them. You know, we'll have to see where this goes. And, you know, they put that out there purposely because, you know, those other seven bombers and their support aircraft were headed across America, right over here in northeast Pennsylvania, across the ocean. To their area operation, I mean, you have several tankers that are involved here, their escorts. They picked up some F-35s, and I saw some, you know, growlers that were, I'm sure, not with the package because they're not stealth aircraft, but were in the area of operation to handle electronic issues that were there. But and then you have the sub surfacing off the southern coast of Iran, launching 30 Tomahawks before they even get the B-2s even get over Iranian airspace, to time it spectacularly to where within seconds everything strikes at once.
Yeah, everything was just right on time. And the neat, really neat part about this is the joint operation between the Navy and the Air Force, because what happens with the Iranians is those TLAMs, those Tomahawks, are so important to give the Iranians the impression that, oh, we thought it would be bombers, but it's really just going to be cruise missiles. Let's focus on that. And then the inevitable happens. And we're talking about, you know, 125 aircraft that all have to be perfect and do the right thing. You can't miss one air refueling. Everything has to go great, and it absolutely did. So kudos. And now we have to look at our dangers here at home with terror cells. We have to look at what's happening right now with attacks on our bases, although it didn't really amount to much. We had three impacts on Al Udeid. Nothing else seems to have really gotten hit. And the Iranians transmitted all of the attacks in advance. What they were really after is to keep their own population stabilized, to let them know we're still the strong man in charge here, and look at us. And they, and even their social media said that they completely pulverized, their words, Al Udeid Air Force Base. So they're really nervous about this potential revolution that's coming, and that's why they took the actions they did today.
Yeah, I've talked about it from the start of this, especially when you have the other side saying, oh, we don't need another war. We don't need boots on the ground. We're not here to do a regime change. I agree. It's up to the Iranian people to change their regime if they want. I think we've sent a clear message, and Israel has sent a clear message, that militarily, you know, they're neutered. There's not much they can do. They haven't challenged a single Israeli aircraft or one of our aircrafts now. What do you make of Iran? I mean, they had a pretty substantial air force that has literally sat this one out.
Well, let's talk about that F-14 fleet. You know, it looked good in Top Gun 1, but it's an antique, and the Iranians, they train with themselves because they're an isolated country. So they really never, you know, their proxies, really, and their terror networks around the world are the teeth of the Iranian military, the cyber capabilities that they have. And those are still threats, by and large. Now, the proxies are basically cashing it in right now as we speak. But that's what leaves them with still. We have to keep our head on a swivel here at home about the cyber possibilities, the terror cell possibilities. But I think what you'll find is if these terror cells find out they're orphaned and that the Ayatollah is dead, and we don't know this yet, but they can't find him, then do they really go through with anything here, or do they kind of melt away trying to hide in society or even self-deport and get themselves out of here?
Yeah, I've been talking about it earlier in the show. My biggest concern right now is, you know, the over 1,000 Iranian nationals who have gotten into the country over the last 4 years that we don't know where they're at. What are their nefarious intentions and cyber attacks? As far as the military goes, like you said, you know, the New York Times reporting that Iran reached out to Qatar to say, hey, we're going to lob a couple of missiles, but basically we're just showing face with our own people. We don't really expect to do much out of it, which is why I don't think we've seen a retaliation from this administration yet, nor do this probably need to be.
I don't think you're going to see anything at all unless there could be some triggers that the president's looking at. If they make a move to close the Straits of Hormuz, and I don't think they do that because they'd be cutting off 1/3 of China's oil supply, or if they do activate attacks here, then I think you'll see the president really get busy with Iran. But, you know, you go back to his first term when the Iranians shot down one of our Global Hawk drones. Everybody, the neocons were all urging him, well, you got to go bomb Iran. And he just said, but we didn't lose any lives. We lost a robot. And so I think the president is very measured. And I think what he did here was quite good, because if you take a look at the Israelis, they've been screaming bloody murder. You got to get your bunker busters into this thing. And if we didn't do it, we'd still be talking about it. Well, we did it. So to the extent that we can knock out the ability to do enrichment of uranium, it's done. It's taken care of. So, Israel, it's back to you. That's your war. But what we have to also look at is there may be 400 kilograms, about 900 pounds, of fissile material that's missing that got out of the country, either by rail to China or by those Chinese cargo airlifters or by some other means. But we have to watch the proliferation of that, because you know full well, Rob, that that stuff can end up becoming the next terrorist dirty bomb.
No doubt. No doubt.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, we have these satellite pictures showing 24 hours before this strike, some trucks lined up. What are you getting from your sources of how successful this strike was? I know if they try to move any nuclear material, we could track it pretty easily with the surveillance systems we have, especially for nuclear material. And I believe they did track it to about a half mile away, and it could have even been part of this strike to begin with. But what are you getting from the assessments you're hearing?
Yep. So I think what we're going to learn in the bomb damage assessment is that there was very little radioactive material left at Fordo, and that those trucks were key and essential to getting a lot of it out. At the same time, you're absolutely right. We do have the ability to track a lot of this stuff. I hope that we did. But the military objective was still good, because you want to start removing their ability to do more. And I don't think that they have that ability, at least not for years from now. I wouldn't worry so much about guys like Russian former President Medvedev squawking that they could sell the Iranians nukes. For one, I don't think they can afford to buy them. And second, I don't think that the Ayatollah is going to be in charge much longer. And you know Medvedev's going to scream crazy Ivan anyway. I think the important part is, where did that material end up? If it ended up in China or Russia, okay, fine. Your nuclear states are ready. Keep that material and prove to us that you're doing that. But if it ended up in Afghanistan, and that's where my sources have been really examining this stuff, then I'm concerned. Then I'm very concerned.
Yeah. As far as I talked about the capabilities of the B-2, what we know that's unclassified, that's public knowledge and out there, and basically, you know, how they fly in a plane for 37 hours, you know, how they stay there. And, you know, the automation of a B-2 is extremely advanced. They do have a makeshift, almost small bunk area where they could take turns. They do have, you know, refrigerator, bathroom, access to a bathroom, and even a microwave from what I'm seeing open sourced. Do you really think any of them bunked out for a couple hours going on a mission like this from the biggest bomb drop since Hiroshima in the United States military?
You know, the one thing I would tell you about our bomber crews, and this goes back to the old SAC days, they're a humorless lot. They take their training very seriously, and so when it's time to go to sleep, they're disciplined. The sleep part of the cycles for a bombing mission of 38 to 40 hours, it's part of their training. It's not just an afterthought. It's not, there's a cot, go rack out. They take the shifts and one on, one off, one on, one off. And they take that very seriously. So, you know, the war jitters, as soon as you take off for the mission, maybe they miss the sleep cycle or two, but then, you know, after that first air of fueling's behind you, then they get settled in. And I think that's probably what ended up happening.
Now, I'm hearing from some of my sources that just as they got the green light to go just before this mission, the commander-in-chief himself got on the comms and said, "This is your commander-in-chief, you're a go." If that happened, and we don't know for sure because it hasn't come from the administration, what kind of morale or what kind of message does that send to the crews that were on that mission advanced over hostile airspace, ready to do it for America?
It sends you to the moon. It sends you to the moon that you have a commander-in-chief who, and everybody understands by now at least, that President Trump has a special place in his heart for those who wear a uniform. And it sends you to the moon when the commander-in-chief himself cuts through all those commanders and says, "I'm taking responsibility for you. I'm sending you into harm's way, and I'm going to tell you to your face, it's time to slap your patch and get into America's fight." And the fact that it wasn't widely reported or they didn't make a political hay out of that or any of that makes it even better. That the president expresses humility. He doesn't need to take a victory lap for this. Now, he's still Trump on the other side of this thing. He just released a statement talking about this counterattack that Iran did by throwing missiles at our bases. He said that the Iranians had a very weak counterattack and couldn't get off much, if anything. You know, that is next world savage trolling. Yeah. But taking that time with the crews is just absolutely heroic. Very nice.
Indeed. Do you expect to see anything else, or is it going to be a response, measured response, based on Iran's actions at this point?
Yeah, I think it goes back to a couple of things. I think it's going to the Israelis to finish the deal that they're after. And I think it gets to the Iranian people to take care of things in their own country. And then, you know, here at home, we've got to be very careful about the counter-terror aspects of what this could bring us. And that is key. That's the number one job right now, clear and present danger here at home. Americans think that foreign wars happen overseas, and that's just not true anymore. Foreign wars come home. And so for a little while, at least, we just need to be very careful and see something, say something, and all that stuff.
Well, I know we've seen the Palestinian flags across some cities in the United States. We've seen the Mexican flags with this ICE raids that are happening. I just saw a friend of mine who runs the FOP in Connecticut posted a flyer for a Stand With Iran rally at the Connecticut Capitol this weekend. So you're right. We have to watch here at home as well. And I think that's where our focus, you know, as everyday Americans need to be. Let the military and our commander-in-chief deal with, you know, Iran itself.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And you look at that sheriff's department tweet where the sheriff of L.A. County in California expressed regret for the Iranian regime, and then they deleted the tweet. We've got some problems here, and they're showing up in terms of our own culture, our embracing of American values. Nothing like what Europe's going through, but we have to be careful because we're very vulnerable right now. And then the other part of that is when you see these protests that are pro-Palestinian or whatever, can you think of any camouflage that would be better to foist an Iranian-based proxy or otherwise terror attack? It just seems to me that those people who think they're doing the right thing, but they're paid $1,000 a day to protest, they could have their protest hijacked rather quickly, and then you could see a real bad thing happen.
No doubt. Again, we're speaking to Air Force retired Brigadier General Blaine Holt, friend of the show, personal friend of mine. General, thanks for joining us looking for more of this in the future.
Oh, I can't wait to talk to you the next time, and it's always good to touch base with you, my friend.
Thank you. Have a great night.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.